Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the weekend. It's Friday, February 12th. This is Lewis Kincaid with the runaround. It is Friday, one day off of being Friday the 13th. That's a good thing. Hope everyone's having a great day. I call this day Freestyle Friday. And let me start by saying on Monday's show, I am going to be having a partner. There will be someone on the show with me. We haven't finalized it, but it will be someone who will be, for the most part, opposite my opinions on a lot of different things, especially politically wise. I didn't set it up that way, but it does work. Sports wise, we may have some disagreements here or there, but I think we'll be mostly in agreement. But politics, we will have some issues. And the very first question that I ask this person is going to determine whether they stay or go. Because we have to be able to get past the very first question. I'm not going to tell them what that question is yet. And we probably won't even, we will not practice this question before this person comes on the show. Some of you will know who it is. I don't know if I can give any other tease than that. I don't think I will. But some of you will absolutely know who it is. And I think I already have a name for what the show will be. If this is going to be a long-term thing, it'll work perfectly. It'll work perfectly. But yes, we're going to have to get past one question. And if we can get past that question with the right answer, then we can go ahead. And when you hear the question, you'll know, well, yeah, we at least have to get by that before we can go much farther, especially if we're going to talk politics, which is what I'm going to start with today in Freestyle Friday. Everyone saw the, I hope some of you saw the debate last night or knew of the debate between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So I just talked about it this morning on my 10-minute video, actually. I thought it was going to be 5 minutes, but, you know, I start talking and can't stop. And I'm a quiet guy for the most part. I am pro-Clinton. I feel like I will probably vote for Hillary Clinton in the fall. Well, certainly our primary here in California is in June, so I will vote for her then, and hopefully we'll see what happens. I've known about Bernie Sanders since he came to the Congress in 1991. I will tell you that I was a C-SPAN junkie. I watched as much C-SPAN as ESPN through the late 80s, early 90s, all through the 90s. Late 80s, all through the 90s. Up to almost right about, it almost coincided with, and not, I think because it changed my television patterns, it kind of coincided with 9/11. Once 9/11, 2001 happened, it kind of switched watching certain things, and TV kind of changed too, if you kind of go back then. People now, we're all used to seeing the scroll on the bottom of, if you're looking at the CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, you see the scroll all the time on the bottom. There was no scroll before 9/11. 9/11 is when that scroll started on the bottom of screens. Even the sports networks, there was not scrolling. But now you see that automatic band on the bottom with just constant news on the bottom. That started 9/11. So I remember Bernie Sanders as a congressperson in 1991. Then he became a senator in 2007. So he started as a congressman during Papa Bush, Bush 41, 1991. And then he was a senator beginning Bush 43 in 2007. And his, like I think I've said before, his whole thing has always been what he's been talking about. Political revolution, we need to take down the banks, you know, the top 1%, the top 0.1% that has over 60% of the income. He has been that all along. And prominently when he was in the House, when he was a congressman, he called himself a socialist, but he would always caucus with the Democrats. That was never any issue. And then he became a senator in 2000, was it 2007 or did he become 2000? He's won, I think this is his second term. No, 2007. Yeah. So when he became a senator, he was still a socialist, but again, he caucused with the Democrats in the Senate. And now what he's trying to do this last year and a half, as he, I guess, decided to run for office, is broaden his outlook. Frankly, his first few months last year, I didn't see him do much broadening of his look beyond, you know, the banks, Wall Street, income inequality, political revolution, future you have to believe in, banks, Wall Street. Now he's starting to look in the last 6 months, Black Lives Matter, which I'm definitely going to be talking about in a few minutes because I want to discuss something else I spoke about this morning, the police shootings this week. And he's tried to broaden his base from one that is, in the state he's from, Vermont and New Hampshire, you're talking 90, 95% white. So he's never really had a constituency of people of color. And now he has to look at starting primaries and caucuses the rest of the country. Because we started with Iowa and New Hampshire, now we're broadening. And now he has to learn how to talk to a different group of people. And sometimes people are very negative about this. Well, now he's going to go to people of color and he's going to give them all the goodies. Well, last time I checked, whenever the goodies are talked about, they're done with primarily conservative or even if it's Democrat, white voters too. Low taxes, that's a goodie, because sometimes taxes are a good thing. You know, I don't like extremely high taxes. I'll vote against a tax increase at times, depending on what it's for. But taxes are a good thing. But when they talk about low taxes, that's a goodie. Trust me, it's a goodie. It's more of your money in your pocket. But this is the United States. I believe that we do have to pay for roads. We do have to pay for schools. We do have to pay for the police. Taxes are a good thing. We do have to pay for our national defense. All those things are paid for through our taxes, and it is important, and it must continue. I am a believer in taxes. Just, you know, at one point in 1950s, which a lot of people say were the good old days, the top tax rate was 91%. So all the actors and the owners of big businesses in this country were being taxed at the rate of 91%. Then again, you know, if bread costs 10 cents a loaf and milk, a nickel, and, you know, you have to in a new brand new car, $3,000, $4,000, you know, your money went a little bit farther. Then the whole equation turned and taxes went down and prices started going up. So that's that whole deal. And anyway, getting back to Mr. Sanders, I listened to him last night, like I've listened to all the debates, and everything he's talking about, the free schooling, the free college education at the public universities and colleges, taking down Wall Street, his way of doing it, the way he's going to solve this is bringing more people into the system. He's not giving a lot of details, his map, the arithmetic of how he's going to pay for a brand new healthcare system. Now, we just got in Obamacare, ACA. It's just started in 2010. It's still rolling out. All of Obamacare has not really been fully implemented yet. I think there's about another year or two until that happens. But now he wants to scrap that. He wants to scrap the CHIPS program, which is Children Health Insurance Program, that Ms. Clinton has worked on for a long time, and just Medicare for all, basically. Single payer, boom, everything. But he's not giving you the numbers. I mean, listen, he wants to change the whole healthcare system. We just started post-World War II getting about 170 million people into the system. And that was originally, the whole idea was the employers provide you healthcare. Employers. That took care of about 70, 80%. Now, over the years, as it's progressed, the last, 50, 60 years from post-World War II, all the soldiers coming back from the war, tried to get health care in the Clinton years, didn't make it. George W. Bush didn't care, didn't try to pass any health care. Now, giving it another shot, Obama passed it, President Obama. And now we've taken care of about 90%. There's still another 10% who are not insured, even with Obamacare. They're not insured. And Senator Sanders wants to take care of the rest. Well, how are you going to pay for it? It always comes down to cost. It does. And until he can give us an idea other than bringing more people into the system, and we can do it because if we have the will, we can do it. That's not the balance sheet. Right? We need a little bit more than that. And all these people that are now getting health care from employers and or on their own, if you're a self-employed business person, you have it on your own, what happens? Is it one day, the 20th, we have the health care we have now, and then on the 21st, it's going to switch over? He's really has not explained it well. And all of his proposals are still a little limp. And I think finally last night, it seems like Secretary Clinton was getting to that point. What are you trying to do? How are you going to do it? Saying he's just bringing more people into the system of voting, trying to bring new people in who are energetic and he's got a lot of young people, a lot of the college age people. Bringing more people into the system is wonderful. But that's not the only thing we need, because they're the ones who vote, but they're not the ones who pass the bills. We still have to work with the Constitution. So if Senator Sanders becomes the president and he wants to make a new healthcare law, or if he wants to rein in Wall Street, or he wants to destroy Wall Street, there's going to be some type of bills he's going to have to get passed. And those people in the Congress now are minority Democrat. So that has to get changed this fall. What's the plan, sir? He has to have a plan. Because if you don't have the plan and we go into next year, he happens to become president, but he has no majority. Well, it's kind of crazy to think that he won't win back if he wins presidency. If he beats Ms. Clinton in the primaries, he beats Donald Trump or Ted Cruz in the November, which I think is also going to be I think it's a long shot. I don't care about what the polls say now, because they're going to attack him. All you're going to hear is socialist. So if Senator Sanders would win the election, he may get the Senate as a majority. He may. That's possible. But you're still left with the House. And the way I did think all those money bills start in the House. So if Speaker of the House Ryan from Wisconsin, where they held the debate last night, if he's the Speaker of the House and he's pretty conservative, what are we going to get passed? So once he figures that out, I'll be more than happy to entertain the possibility of voting for him. But even then he's got an issue with his whole foreign policy, which is none. And he can criticize Secretary Clinton for, hanging around former Secretary of State who used to work for President Nixon, named Henry Kissinger. He can complain about him because he's got some involvement in things as Secretary of State that weren't the greatest. Down in Argentina, especially down in South America, getting certain people out of office, you know, CIA assisted killings. Kissinger involved in some shady deals in Argentina and Chile, pretty much all over the world, even Israel, and you know, the whole 7 day war and 6 day war in 1973. So he's got some issues. And Ms. Clinton had to talk about, yes, I take advice from a lot of different people, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to do the same things they do. Senator Sanders has really no foreign policy. He's just saying, say, you voted for the Iraq War. Okay, well, that's 2002. We're in 2016. Give me something else. So there's a bit of an issue there. And Senator Sanders needs to get some meat on the bone because he hasn't convinced me yet. The other thing I talked about this morning was the police shootings. We've had a rash of shootings this week. I think since Monday, literally, there have been five police officers killed, different areas of the country, one in Colorado. Last night, there was one in Georgia. There was one, I believe, in a North Dakota or a South Dakota, one of the Dakotas. And then there was two that were killed in Maryland near Panera Bread. Some altercation outside of Panera Bread came, the guy had a gun. I don't know if the officers in all these different situations, each one obviously is a different situation. So you don't know what, last night in Atlanta or Georgia, I think right outside Atlanta, they were the police officer was presenting a warrant. Person didn't want the warrant, got upset, shot. I'm not sure about all the details of the others. Listen, we have a huge issue in this country right now about police brutality, police shooting unarmed citizens, especially black citizens. This is where the Black Lives Movement came forward. And the people are on the one side or the other. Well, I'm just giving you my feelings about the whole thing. I've heard from a few people already this morning about it. Some family, some people have just heard the video and they wanted to let me know what they how they felt. And you can be on one side or the other. Listen, I don't want to see officers, police are supposed to help us. One of the things I talked about early this week with the whole why were the Black Panthers even around in the 60s? This is the 50th anniversary this year. And the whole Beyonce dancing with the black, you know, she made a, gave a little nod to the Panthers by her the wardrobe she wore. They were around because they were and they were carrying guns in the 1966, 1967, 1968, because there were too many officer-involved killings of citizens that were never solved and never prosecuted in any way. They said, enough of this. Tired of getting our people killed. We're going to start walking the neighborhoods with guns. And when we see you guys out there, we're going to look and see what's going on. So when you know, come up on someone, we need to see what's going on. We didn't have cameras in 1966, didn't have video, didn't have dash cam. This is what they were doing. And they've been heavily criticized from the pro-police segment of our society, nominally Republicans, nominally conservatives. But the Panthers were trying to protect their own and protect their community. I think it's gotten totally lost because the FBI did a very good job of infiltrating the group, putting in people who were supposedly for the Panthers, but who tried to bring them down. The FBI made sure that there were newspaper stories that were written about them that were highly negative. So the fact that they were supporting health clinics in the neighborhood, giving children preschool meals so they could have meals to eat, try to get drugs out of the community. The FBI made sure newspapers always reported on if anyone had any little issue in their past and promoted that as opposed to what they were trying to do on the positive. So these police shootings this week, they're not good. They're not good. And it's not something that I want to see as a American citizen, but there are people out here, including a few family members who are concerned and they're scared because they believe if they come up on police that this may happen to them. That's real. I can't change anyone's mind off that. That's not anything to change. We've seen too many instances now in the last 3, 4, or 5 years. It started coming to the head, to publicity with the whole Ferguson, Missouri, and Michael Brown. And I, for one person, still do not believe the officer's story. I don't believe it. One of the issues that we have is that if there's a shooting involved, an officer-involved shooting, mostly of unarmed people, and you often hear, oh, they were going for my gun. And then we find out that there's video, they weren't going for a gun. Or this shooting in Chicago where Mayor Rahm Emanuel, they didn't disclose the video for a year. The night that it happened, the officers were in a restaurant that showed the video, that could see the video from the outside, and they were in there doctoring it, trying to erase. There's missing minutes from that video. One of the issues is that too often these police, when these things happen, these officer-involved shootings of unarmed citizens, they're not prosecuted. They get desk duty for a month, 2 months, and then they come back, and there's no judicial, prosecuting attorneys are in lockstep with the police union and the police, and they're not going to prosecute them. They never come to trial. Guilty or innocent, we'll never know because it never gets there. That's not right. Another issue, and I believe this is a real issue that not many people are talking about. The KKK inside the police department. Fruitland, Florida, in 2014. There was a two officers were found to have been part of the KKK. A deputy police chief, David Borst, and a corporal, George Honeywell. Fruitland Park, Florida, 2014. That wasn't the first time an officer had been accused of belonging to the KKK in Fruitland Park. In 2009, an officer quit when they found out he was a district kleagle or a recruiter for the National Aryan Knights of the KKK. Photos came out with him dressed in his whole getup, the whole regalia, the hood and the whole thing, with his police belt on. Now, this is the thing that has been troubling me the last few years. The two in 2014, the deputy police chief David Borst, he was responsible for training the 13 full-time and 5 part-time cops in the department. So let's think about that. The deputy police chief in a police department in Florida, a member of the KKK, was responsible for training the 13 full-time and 5 part-time cops in the department. So that, when I found out, and I've known about this since 2014 when it came out. So I decided to take a look. What's going on there? I wanted to find out how many police are there in the country, highway patrol, police, state police, the whole deal, anyone that carries a gun. And there's approximately 500,000 police in the country, which, if you try to break it down to the 50 states, that comes out to what, about 1,000, 5,000 per, let's see, 500,000, 50, about 10,000 per state. Okay? 10,000 per state. I'm of the belief, I've just come around to this. I think there's 1%. I think there's 1%. That's 100 per state that have either participated or actually members of the KKK. I don't think that's being too far outside the realm. That's 5,000 police in this country. So when we talk about how to reform the police department and people are talking about training, we got to get better training in the department. I'm not with the better training. I don't even know what that means. Better training? Why don't we first find out what type of organizations they're in. How about the hiring part? Let's start with the hiring, because it seems to me, I don't think Fruitland Park, Florida is the only city where this has happened, where they've had three officers in the last 7 years that were discovered to be part of the KKK. I just don't think that's true. And if anyone can tell me that it's okay, well, that they have free association, you know, this is America, you should be able to associate who you want to associate with, you're right. You should be able to associate with whoever you want to associate with, but not being a police officer. No. That's part of the problem. And that, along with the unions, you know, there's certain police unions in this country where, and this came up in Ferguson, Missouri, and I don't know the exact time factor in Ferguson, but there are plenty of union rules. The union rule, if there's an officer-involved shooting, that officer does not have to be interviewed about that shooting for up to, I've seen it as much as 2 weeks. And if we recall in Ferguson, Missouri, the officer, we didn't even know Dennis Wilson's name for a week. We didn't even know who this person was. And it finally came out. He didn't have to discuss this with anyone. And listen, if you are involved in an officer-involved shooting and you don't have to talk to anybody for a week, I'm sorry, you're getting your story together. I bet you're talking to somebody, but it's just not public. It's your attorney. That's not right. That is not right. And that is absolutely what I believe happened with Officer Wilson. You know, he drove away from the scene with a police officer, obviously, in the car when he drove away from that shooting of Michael Brown and Ferguson. And they started, that's the beginning of getting the story together. That's wrong. That's wrong. Now, I'm calling wrong on both sides. That is wrong. I don't want to see the police being shot. Like I said, these five this week, that's unfortunate. We need to find out what happened. But you can't sit up here and have KKK as police officers. You can't sit here and have police officers shoot unarmed people and never have any type of trial or any type of discovery in finding out why this happened. And these whole rigged grand jury systems where in Cleveland, Tamir Rice was shot, a 12-year-old, for having a toy gun. And they didn't even do it. They weren't even trying to prosecute the police officer who did that shooting. There is some reforms that need to go on. And the reforms need to start from the first moment someone applies for the job. And that will help. On the flip side, you can't keep, you can't keep having people not obey. And let me explain to you what I mean. When someone gets pulled over, I don't think it helps any at all. And it's happened this week. Someone, pizza delivery guy, get pulled over. He said he changed illegal lane change, pizza delivery. And he basically, he had a dash cam on his car. He cracked his window and don't know what happened up until the officer got there. But the officer came up with gun out, flashlight in the other hand, and he kept telling him to pull the window down. So I don't know how it got so bad at the very beginning. But if all you have in your car is a pizza, and then it turned out he had a driver's license but didn't have his registration. Well, okay, now we're compounding the issue. If you're going to drive with no registration, what is it that you're asking for? What is it you're asking for? You're asking for trouble. Now, I know that doesn't have trouble with the people that say, you know, these officers are all bad. You can't do that. And then tell the officer, no, I don't not want to pull my window down. Fortunately, this guy this week didn't get shot. He eventually, I don't know what happened to him long term. If he didn't have his registration, they may have taking the car away from them, or at least giving them a ticket. But there's a lot of work to be done because there's people pitted on one side who are, anti-officer for good reason because they see a lot of bad. And I think most of those people know that they are good officers. The issue is there are good officers, but there's too many who know the right thing but won't tell on their officer because that's snitching. They see something bad, but don't want to report the officer. So the people who are anti-police, all they're doing is murdering citizens. They've had reason to believe that. And when we have members of the KKK in the force, that's not a good look. I'm telling you right now, it's not. And if anyone wants to tell me it is, please do, because I can't figure it out. I don't see how that's a good look to have members of the police department in the KKK. And I think we have them in every state. I honestly believe we have KKK members who are wearing badges and guns in every state in the union. And that needs to be fixed. And until that gets fixed, we have a problem in this country with our policing. And the judicial system has to be fixed. Prosecuting attorneys have to stop blindly looking at these shootings and saying, there's no way I'm going to prosecute this officer because I'm pro-police. Well, that doesn't help. I think some jurisdictions are starting to change. They have citizens review boards, and they take it out of the prosecuting attorney's hand because they just can't. They're not doing it. They're not doing their job in too many parts of the country. At the same time, on the other side, the people who are pro-police can't see anything other than the police are always right. You need to understand Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter is important. It doesn't mean that white lives don't matter. It means that people are tired of being killed for no reason, unarmed. Dash cam shows that they're unarmed. Why should that be? And you should be able to appreciate that, even being pro-police. But again, you have people on both sides who are blind to the other reality, and it's going to take a long time to get it fixed. Switch subjects. This guy, Clive and Bundy, the Bundy family, that group, 2 years ago was in Nevada. Just the other day, it finally ended in Oregon. 41 days holed up in a government building with guns, saying the government is against us. They're out to kill us. Got to give the President Obama administration a lot of credit. They didn't attack them. They did kill one person. But there was about 20 people in there total. And finally got the last four out the other day. And this was the son of Clive and Bundy, the guy that was in Nevada 2 years ago, talking all kinds of nonsense. So the Oregon thing is done. So Clive and Bundy's trial for what happened 2 years ago is now coming up. And guess what the anti-government person is requesting? A court-appointed attorney. He can't afford his own. He needs help from the government. So a man who's been pointing his finger at the government now needs help from the government. He's a peach. He is just a piece of work, and we will continue to watch that story. In fact, that will be something that we will talk about Monday with my secret special guest. We will see what's going on. What else is there to talk about? What else? Oh, Sega Genesis. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that one. Syria. There's a ceasefire in Syria, finally. If there's one thing that I'm most critical about President Obama on in terms of foreign policy, it was 2 years ago when he said, if it's found that Syria, that the President Assad there has chemical weapons and he's using it on his people, if they cross that red line, that's the word he used, the phrase he used, red line, we will take action. It was found that Syria did use chemical weapons, but the president did not take action. And it's just been a very, very bad mess in Syria. Again, all of this stems from going to war in Iraq in 2003. It all stems from this. That's not to say that Syria may not have gone into a quagmire without the war. But as it turned out, once we started that war, and once we got rid of all of Saddam Hussein's army, his police force, 500,000 strong, 500,000 strong, think about that, the army. Same as the amount of police we have in this country, that was his protection force in that country. And the U.S., when they went over and started that war, disbanded them. Oh, you were with Hussein, we don't want you, get out of here. Guess what Al-Qaeda and ISIS is from? Guess who they're from? That's where they came from. I'll never understand why we did that, why we started the war. It was just crazy, silly. What else? What else today? I think I'm going to flip it now. No more Super Bowl. We're done with the Super Bowl. I'm not touching it. Cam, my guest on Monday, may want to touch it. You know, it's interesting because I love sports. I love each season. But when that season's done, I'm done. So I really kind of don't want to see any more football now. You know, if there was like another season of what you used to have, a spring league, a USFL or WFL, I could never watch that stuff. I couldn't watch it because I'm footballed out. I did my football for 6 months. Now it's baseball and I'm into the NBA. You know, the Final Four will be coming up in a month, so that'll be fun to watch. You know, all the springtime stuff is coming on. So, and then by the end of the basketball season, I'm done with basketball. Get that out of the way. And baseball goes through the summer. And then by the end of summer, football starts again. You know, the rotation just keeps going. Just go with it. So now is the baseball season. And I am a St. Louis baseball Cardinal fan. If you grew up in St. Louis, or almost anywhere in the Midwest, to be quite honest with you, it was easy to become a fan, especially if you go back some years before the westward expansion of baseball, when you had the Dodgers move from Brooklyn to LA, you had the New York Giants move to San Francisco. Before that big expansion, before that push to move west, St. Louis was the westernmost city in the National League. So that's from 1903, which is considered the beginning of the modern era of baseball, 1903 to 1958, St. Louis was the westernmost team in baseball. So you get all of the South, you know, no team in Texas, no Texas teams, no Houston, no Dallas, no teams there, Texas Rangers, Mississippi, Alabama, no Georgia, no Atlanta yet. No teams in Florida, only in spring training, but no teams in Florida. All the teams were concentrated in the upper Midwest and on the East Coast. So, and at that time, there's the radio station in Missouri, KMOX, that you could hear on a clear night. You can hear it to California. You can hear it in California. On certain nights, you can pull in 11:20 a.m., and then you'll hear the St. Louis station. And it goes all the way down south. So Cardinals played baseball, Stan Musial, Dizzy Dean, Enos Slaughter, the Gas House Gang from the 1930s, Gibson in the early 60s, and McCarver, Lou Brock. All those games would be on the radio, and it really built up a huge fan base for the Cardinals pretty much all over the country. And now people who may have been Cardinal fans young, they move on, they change. But they still remember that team. So they're my team of birth. I mean, as a kid, I remember the greatest radio announcing team in all of baseball history. We know there's Vin Scully out there, but he doesn't by itself. There's Red Barber, formerly, I think, of the Brooklyn Dodgers. There's a lot of people over the years who have done it solo. But there was no team, radio announcing team, better than the team in St. Louis in the 50s and 60s. It was Jack Buck. A lot of people remember Jack Buck. His son, Joe Buck, now does football and baseball, the World Series, and Harry Carey. Most people don't know that Harry Carey was a St. Louis Cardinal announcer before he became Chicago White Sox, then he became Chicago Cubs. I think he did Oakland A's, too, for a moment, for maybe a year. Chicago White Sox, Oakland A's, then Chicago Cubs. Or Oakland A's, Chicago White Sox, and Chicago Cubs. They were a great team. They taught me baseball from A to Z. So many nights I'd have a transistor radio under the pillow, especially when the Cardinals were playing in Los Angeles. So it's, you know, behind 2 hours, it's 9:30 at night, 7:30 in L.A., and I wake up in the morning and can't hear anything. What happened? Battery ran out. So many nights. So the team obviously has been a very big success since the 1920s. They've had some great teams, World Series championships. The Yankees obviously have the most. I think the Yankees now are at 27. But the team that's in second place, the only other team in double digits, is 11 with the St. Louis Cardinals. So our next one will be 12. I really thought before the season last year that this would be the Cardinals' year. I really thought that they were going to be in the World Series and had an excellent chance of winning it. They had great pitching, decent offense. Offense has gone down in Major League Baseball over the last 4 or 5 years. Once they crack down on the PEDs, as they say, steroids and all the other things, the scoring runs has not been as high. Pitching has gotten better. But one of the things that I've always been big on in terms of a baseball Cardinal fan is you have to have defense. You have to be able to field the ball, throw it to the right base, get the out, catch the ball, throw it to the right base. If you don't do those things, if instead of three outs in a half inning, you give up five outs because two of them, you had the out, but you threw the ball away and the runner got on base instead of being out, those things, you won't win. You will not win. And the Cardinals had a great season. They won 100 games last year. But late in the season, most from August on, you started seeing some sloppiness that you thought would hurt the team. Baseball is a game that's played up the middle. You have to have a great catcher. Obviously, you have to have pitching. You have to have a great second baseman and shortstop. And your center fielder is the person in the outfield. That's like the quarterback of the outfield. Catcher is the quarterback of the whole team. It sees the whole field. Yadier Molina is one of the greatest of all time. If he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, as soon as 5 years are up, who is? I don't think there's any doubt. The Cardinals have been fortunate to have him. He's probably the greatest catcher the Cardinals ever had. But one of the things that happened last year is I started noticing some slippage, especially at second base, Colton Wong, a little bit of shortstop. Johnny Peralta tailed off in terms of hitting. In the second half, his defense was okay, but his hitting really tailed off. He was literally just banging the ball, and you could just see he was going to ground out. Even when he came up to bat, you're like, okay, he's going to hit the ball as hard as he can, and it's going to hit that patch of dirt like 2 feet in front of the home plate. He's going to hit it. It's going to be a hard hit, but it's going to hit that dirt. And if a ball hits if you're swinging the bat and the ball hits the dirt before it gets anyplace else, that's not usually getting through the infield for a base hit. I can just tell you right now, if it hits that patch of dirt that's right in front of home plate before it goes anywhere, you're not getting anywhere. You're not getting on base. So that was Peralta's issue. Colton Wong just had too many games where he made an error. You could almost see him pout. And he had a few double error games. Well, first of all, maybe it was a case of foreshadowing. Because the first game of last season, game number one, home game for the Cardinals. Colton Wong, first ground ball, first batter, commits an error, Colton Wong. And then he pulled it together. First half of the season, he was pretty good, batting well. But the second half of the season, he had a two-error game, and you could see after the first error, he was kind of pouting, and then that second one came. I think he had two-error games during the second half of the season, and he just wasn't fielding his area with any confidence. Just felt that there wasn't a lot of confidence there. And going into the playoffs, yeah, I knew the Cardinals had 100 wins, but the team was shaky at the end. The pitching, which was number one in the National League all year long, best pitching in the National League, best by far, ERA, pitching great with runners on base. They have the best ERA with runners on base. It seemed like anytime they had a runner on first, it would be two out. Or if they had a runner on second and third, it would be two out, and they get the out. Toward the end of the season, Michael Wacha was starting to get a little weak-armed and had some issues. John Lackey pitched great all through the season. He was the real workhorse. We lost Adam Wainwright, so he really wasn't pitching all season. Jaime Garcia pitched well second half of the season. He fell off in the playoffs, that one fatal game where he was evidently ill with the flu or whatever, and just game two against the Cubs was the end for the Cardinals. They just fell apart. The pitching, and then C-Mart, Carlos Martinez, great pitcher, would have really, really helped in the playoffs, really helped. But he had shoulder issues. He's supposed to be ready come spring training. He's going to start in a week. So they went into the playoffs kind of limping, for lack of a better term, limping. Yadi had an injury. He was coming, you know, he had been out for about 3 or 4 weeks, and it was a thumb injury. He was tagging a guy out at home, and somebody slid into him, and it yanked his thumb, tore some ligaments in his thumb. He was coming back for the playoffs, but he wasn't 100%. Couldn't bat worth a doggone. You know, just really couldn't put any power in the ball. The team was not in good shape in the playoffs, and subsequently, they got beat by a young Chicago Cubs team that was hungry to win. Couldn't wait to play the Cardinals. They were happy. I was happy to play the Cubs. I thought we could have won, but there was no chance. So the team that had 100 wins, that was the winningest team during the regular season, couldn't put it together for the playoffs, and that was sad. So this year, in the National League, the teams that look to be the strongest are the New York Mets, who were in the World Series last year, lost to the Royals, Kansas City Royals. And San Francisco Giants look great because they have Johnny Cueto. The San Francisco, I tip my hat to him. Bruce Bochy is the best manager in baseball, first. That's my opinion. I believe when Mike Matheny of the Cardinals manager, plays him, Matheny is always at a disadvantage. Bochy is a wizard when it comes to handling his bullpen and just moving his men around in the right way. He seems to have a knack for how to use his bullpen, and it is nails the Cardinals every time. Now, the interesting thing about the Giants is they won the World Series in 2010. Cardinals won it in 2011. Giants won it in 2012. Cardinals went to the World Series in 2013, but we lost to the Red Sox. San Francisco Giants won it in 2014. Beat the Kansas City Royals that year. 2015, the Cardinals looked like that was my whole thing last year. Hey, it's 2015. We're on the odds, and Giants are on the evens. Okay, let's get it done. But we didn't. Well, it's 2016, and I think the Giants are coming back again. They had an off season last year. They got hot toward the second portion of the season, but didn't have enough to get in the playoffs. They're back. Madison Bumgarner is still there. They have Johnny Cueto. They got Denard Span, I believe the center fielder from the Nationals. He's on their team now. They're going to be right there with the Dodgers in the National League West. Tell you what, the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to be pretty good too. They beefed up their pitching with Shelby Miller from Atlanta, former Cardinal. Still have some very good hitters on that team. Tony La Russa now is running the Arizona Diamondbacks, so I know he's intent on building a good team. So that's the West. It's basically the Giants, Dodgers, and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Then you have, and the Padres were no slouch, but they're still a team that's on the come up. In the Central with the Cardinals, you know, the Cubs right now are everybody's favorite pick. And until they don't prove it, it's the Cubs, you got the Pirates, and the Cardinals are going to be there. The Cardinals, the challenge this season is staying healthy. They don't have a lot of depth. They lost Jason Hayward to the Cubs. They lost pitching John Lackey, but their pitching should be okay, and they have some pitching depth. But in terms of hitting is where can they do it. You have Matt Holliday in left. Randall Grichuk, who was good last year as long as he was healthy. And then you have Piscotty in right field, who really was a wonderful kid. And until he crashed into his teammate out there in left field in the series with Atlanta, right at the end of the season, he was really doing well. But they all have to stay healthy. Holiday has to stay healthy. He can't pull a muscle and be out a month. Grichuk. You have Tommy Pham, who was a wonderful surprise last year. Really disappointed he wasn't used more in that brief series with the Cubs. I don't know what Mike Matheny was thinking there. He used now traded, what was the left-handed center fielder? Now he's traded on San Diego. Anyway, Tommy Pham is a good backup. Potential starter, but he's had injury issues over the years. Then at first base, you have Adams, Big City. And you want to see him be able to play for a whole season without getting injured. And he was out most of last year with a huge groin tear. Yadi is going to be delayed because he had a finger injury. So the catching, he may not even be able to start the season. Maybe for a week or two, and then he'll start, which is fine because this whole thing is he can't play 150 games anymore. He's got to play 120. They got a new backup that should help. Cruz is no longer on the team. They got a new backup from Cincinnati, and I think he'll do a good job. Colton Wong has to improve. He needs to improve his defense, and he has to be a consistent hitter, not looking for a home run every time he's up. Make contact with the ball. Johnny Peralta, this is his third season on a 4-year contract. Count me concerned. He's never had range at shortstop. And obviously, shortstop is a big position. Cardinal fans are spoiled with, having in the past Ozzie Smith and Dal Maxfield. We've had some really good shortstops, but obviously, Ozzie is the whiz. Need help there. And then you have Matt Carpenter at third base. And then you have the whole situation with how's the lineup? Is Matt Carpenter still going to be the leadoff? We don't know. Pitching should be okay. Adam Wainwright's there. Carlos Martinez will be there. Jaime. Michael Wacha, who to me can be a star once he gets healthy and is able to push through for a season. His whole thing has been able to keep the strength up for a whole season. In the National League East, you have the Mets, possibly the Washington Nationals, who now has Dusty Baker as their manager. So it'll probably be those two teams. Atlanta is still rebuilding, and Florida, they're never ready to win. It's like every 10th year, they get into the World Series, but they're not ready now. In the American League, it looks like Boston is going to be better. The Yankees are going to be there. Toronto, obviously. Those are the three teams, I think. Baltimore, maybe, depending on how their pitching holds up. And then in the American League Central, the Royals. Until somebody knocks off the Royals, talk to me. I don't see anyone. They convinced me last year. 2 years ago, I remember the Cardinals played them during the season because they have that home and home with the interleague games. And they beat the Cardinals 2 years ago during the season. I'm like, wow, seem that good? I don't know. They were in the World Series. I thought, okay, they're decent. They came back last year, and they really proved it. I thought the Mets were going to win that series. Kansas City Royals were fantastic. So hats off to, something else for the Cardinals to push for. Not only do they have Chicago in their own division, they got the interstate rival in the other league who's the World Series champion. So hats off to Kansas City. And then the AL West, is this the year for Albert Pujols and the Angels? Possibly. The Texas Rangers are going to be right there. Seattle was supposed to be a great team, but they haven't put it together yet. So we'll see what happens in the American League. I am more in general of a National League guy. The National League doesn't have that DH, which I am totally against. They say that they're coming back with the DH this next year, and I'm It's going to come into it's going to be in both leagues. So no longer will the pitcher bat. I'm not a fan of that. I like the pitcher batting. I feel like I'm just old in baseball, the sport of baseball. I tend to be old school about a lot of stuff. And with the DH, I think it's just I'm not into it. But that's another position. The way the baseball players union sees it, that's another position that gets the bat. That's a higher, you know, more often than not, a higher salary for that extra batter. So it may be here next year. So we'll see what happens. So that's my show today. Like I said, on Monday, and I will get it turned up over the weekend, but it looks like on Monday, the show will be at 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So adjust or archive it. I've gotten some really good. I just passed, I'll say this, pat myself on the back. I just passed 20,000 viewers for my shows, which I'm happy. So thank you, everyone out there. That's been a great thing. So people have been really viewing the shows and listening to them, and I get some feedback online and also on Facebook. I will firm up my surprise guest on, you'll know on Monday. Like I said, the show will start on Monday, 11, and we will go through everything that happened over the weekend, talk a little sports, talk a little politics, and we will get in the runaround. Have a great weekend, everyone. See ya.
Oh, God.